explicit guidance from our GDPR officer that the only people allowed to record this meeting are ourselves. If anybody has any third-party recording tools, we have to ask you to turn that off because it's apparently a GDPR breach. Fascinating these days when you run these meetings, all the little extra things that one has to pay attention to. So, okay, we've got 137 pre-registered. So I've got 43 people showing at the moment. I'm just going to give it another 2 or 3 minutes, maybe to let people join. And then we'll go straight into things. I'm assuming it's worked. Great. Good. That's good. Thank you, Sam. Actually, while we're waiting for people to join, let me just run through one or two other things. Okay. Now. Okay. I'll give you the objectives of this discussion today are really to highlight, depending on which piece of research that you read, between 60 and 80% of SMEs go out of business within 6 months of a data loss. That, to me, is an incredibly chilling statistic. What we're going to be aiming to do today is help you understand actions that you can take to address that. As I come towards the end, I will share with you 13 steps that you may want to take to protect your own cybersecurity. It's actually all covered in an article that I wrote for Money Marketing earlier in the year. I'll share that in the chat before the end of the call. Depending on how we go with the core elements that Chris, Joseph and I have rehearsed or agreed we would bring up in advance, we may get time to go into those 13 things. It's quite a fascinating list, actually. I will make you aware that there is a guide to cybersecurity that we have recently published. It's free for any advisors or anyone else for that matter to download from the URL, pardon me, from the URL that is on screen at the moment. Sam, we will be making these slides available to people at the end of the afterwards. We'll put the recording of today's session up on advisorsoftware.com. I'm sure there will be people who have registered but haven't actually managed to make it today. So anyone that registered will get sent out access to that, and we'll generally promote the event. So that's a really good time to move on. Allow me to introduce the two people that have kindly agreed to come and talk to us today about all matters cybersecurity. Firstly, Chris Davies from Howden. You know, Howden are an enormous player in the PI market for our industry and also very actively involved in cybersecurity. And certainly conversations that Chris and I have been having in the run-up to this meeting have been fascinating and putting on the table actually some quite chilling data. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. And then we're also joined by Joseph Grace, who is CEO and founder at Legado, who's going to give us some practical experiences of things that can be done, and I think more of us should be doing, to make sure, I don't know about anybody else on the call, but if there is one subject that, I won't say I lose sleep on it, but anything is likely to cause me lost sleep these days, it's cybersecurity. Because, you know, when we come to spend on technology budgets, there's one group of people that really don't skimp on what they will spend. They will have the latest and the greatest and the smartest technology, and that's cyber criminals. Just to give you a sort of few stats around this. In June 23, the ICO reported that there were 640 cyber breaches against UK pension schemes, an increase of 4,000%. Financial services firms generally are very attractive targets for cyber criminals. The FCA reported in 2022, the FCA reported that there were 50% more cyber incidents that they had seen. 74% of financial sector executives believe cyber attacks to be the highest risk to the financial industry. That's Bank of England research. I wonder if 74% of us in the industry actually treat it as our highest risk. I could go on. There are many, many more stats, but I'm kind of not going to bore you with those at this time. What I will do now is come to each of our speakers. I've given them a brief overview, but perhaps you'd like to begin by giving a more detailed introduction yourself. Chris, would you like to start?
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Amos. And again, thank you for inviting us to speak today. A little bit about me, perhaps, to start. I lead the financial and risk advisor division within Howden. We run in specialty lines, and basically what that means is that Howden has a whole team dedicated to each profession. So my team will deal with the financial advice community, mortgage advisors, financial advisors, insurance brokers. We'll have separate teams dealing with accountants and lawyers. So what we do is we effectively live and breathe, I suppose, this profession every day. We don't deal with anybody else. We only deal with financial advice businesses. I think just to then give you a little bit further background for everybody listening, it's a small profession by itself. We may well have even perhaps crossed paths or worked together in the past. I've been in the industry for over 30 years, and I've acted at senior board level for full responsibility for compliance, regulation and anti-money laundering. So before coming to work at Howden, which I've only done in the last 3 years, my total background really is as a practitioner. So building and running businesses that are in this space. And really what I've tried to do since joining Howden is be a sort of a conduit, I suppose, between the insurance industry, who often think they know what happens in our profession, and maybe wiping away some of the myths where I've been able to do that, or on occasion reinforcing where the real risks are. Because again, I think there can be a mismatch from the insurance side. So that's what I try and do. And we try to come up with some innovation, really, in how we can resolve those risks for our client base. So that's kind of how we do that. And going on to cyber, for example, it's clear that on the professional indemnity side, it's mandatory. So I think everybody on the call will recognize that the regulator says they have to have a policy in place to trade that covers them for negligence. Which makes a lot of sense. But equally, on the other side, it always surprises me that the regulator, at least at this point, doesn't suggest that it's mandatory to have some form of cyber insurance that will protect yourselves and your clients, and your business in the unfortunate event that you suffer a cyber attack. So that's really my interest in terms of how the regulatory overlap yet doesn't really, in my mind, still represent the real risks that are out there. And as some of the stats that you mentioned earlier set the scene.
Great. And then Joseph, do you want to come in and give us a similar introduction and background to yourself and what you're doing?
Sure. Thanks, Ian. And just to echo what Chris said, thank you for the invite today. So I'm Joseph Grace. I'm the founder and the CEO of a company called Legado. We established it in 2018. So we're a 5-year-old business based out of Edinburgh. We're a team of about 30 and we're backed by the FNZ Group. So we work with a number of FNZ's institutional clients and a number of other clients throughout regulated financial services, including insurers, legal practices and financial advisors. And our platform really helps organizations to create more meaningful but secure interactions with customers through channels that they are familiar with. So these might be channels like SMS or email, but really what we've created is a way to bring them back into an experience that is secure and encrypted. So it really de-risks any chance of a cybersecurity breach. It's a turnkey solution, so it can be fully white labeled and embedded into any existing digital experience. And it really is built to modernize interactions that you have with customers. And then there are a number of features that also help with consumer duty evidencing and compliance. And these can be features like red receipts, document revocation, encryption. And we take a very modular approach to development. So with all of our partners, we work in a way that's very long-term and strategic to understand any needs that they might have, any gaps that they might have in their security approach. And we look to build features to effectively fill those gaps and make sure it's a secure approach.
Okay, so just let's go into through general thoughts on the cybersecurity market. Chris, as we said, Howden, very, very active player in the on the PI side in our industry. But you've expressed to me previously a surprise that there's not as many advisors taking up cyber insurance. I think, is it, you know, can we talk, let's talk about the role of cyber insurance and, you know, what does it bring to the party? I think people might think of it as exactly that, insurance, but actually, if you have that cover, if you have the right cover, what are the extra things that a cyber insurance policy will bring to a firm that will make their strategy and protection more robust?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, just to go back to your touch on your first point, I mean, we can't be certain that all of our clients would only take out a cyber insurance policy through us. So I don't have an exact stat, but I would say from anecdotal evidence that the majority of firms do not take out cyber insurance. I would definitely be able to say that, I think, quite clearly from our experience from our client bank. And strangely, there seems to be an inverse correlation in that the bigger your IT team and your tech people are within your organization, the more likely you are to take out cyber insurance. So you would think that it would be the other way around, but it isn't. In fact, the more it seems that you spend on your IT and you perhaps research into what those risks are in detail, the more likely you are, in my experience, to actually put in place a cyber insurance policy to help support you through, you know, what would be a very unfortunate time. And I think, your point is spot on. The insurance itself is really, I think, the easiest way I can describe it is a firm's panic button. And if we can imagine what it, I mean, thankfully, I've never had to experience it. But if you can imagine what it must be like to turn up to work on a Monday or any other day of the week for that matter, and you try to turn your computer on and not your normal screen pops up, but a screen telling you that you've been the subject of some form of cyber attack and there's some form of malware already on your system, you know, that must be a pretty sobering day. And
JobKeeper calling SPV Lights. Please press 1 if you would like to place a new order. Press 2 for help.
I should have said earlier, if everybody other than our speakers, could everybody else please put themselves on mute? Sorry for that interruption, Chris.
No, that's
fine. Proof we're doing it live.
I hope the order goes through well anyway. But the so I think within and around that, so the question arises about what happens on that fateful day if and when you get that screen that pops up. And just to maybe make it a little bit lighthearted, just for a second, although it's a very serious subject, it's amazing to me that we spend pretty much all our lives telling all of our teams and people and whoever we work with, never press on a link that you don't know where it comes from. And guess what the cyber hacker asks you to do? From a known hacker, it asks you to press a link to go onto the dark web to start the communication process. So there's an irony in that we've spent a huge amount of time telling people not to do that. And that's the first thing that you may well have to do in order to open up a communication link with the person that that has your data. What we're seeing in is that the sophistication of attacks is increasing. So only a few years ago, the attack would basically be an attempt to disable the systems, you know, that were in place. Just shut them down, just stop access, take control, and then hold the firm to ransom in order to remove themselves from your systems. What we're seeing now is effectively an increase in what we'd call double extortion attacks. And what we mean by that is there's very often a number of weeks or months that the breach has happened, so that the cyber attacker has often breached the systems weeks or months earlier and has either been dormant for a while or has been looking around inside the systems to understand what data is actually there, how valuable that data might be, and what they have access to. And if that data is in a format that they can just remove, the double extortion is one, they block the system so you can't actually get in. The second thing is that they may well have removed the data or a copy of that data, and they might then be threatening to actually place that on the web and publish that on the web. So you have a two-pronged attack, I suppose. Now, the cyber policy, in part, one of its biggest advantages is that the moment this happens, you have a 24/7, 365-day a year hotline to experts that can tell you exactly what to do. So if you're sitting there right now thinking, I would know what to do, brilliant. But for example, at least make sure that whatever you've planned for this kind of event is on paper, because obviously mistake number one, keeping it on your laptop when you can't open your laptop. These are the things that you need to think about. So the first thing is, should you pay the ransom? What are your data backups? What are the breaches that have occurred? What data has gone and where might it be published? And there are around about somewhere between 100 and 150 groups that the FBI and law enforcement across the world are monitoring, mainly in Eastern European and Russia. And they deal with your data in different ways. So some you might pay the ransom and they do exactly what they say. Others you might pay them the ransom and they'll give you access to your data, but they will go ahead and publish it. And without your own knowledge about what problem you're trying to solve, it's about having access to expertise and people that can help you through that. You mentioned the notification requirements. So understanding what you do have to notify to the ICO, there's a 72-hour time frame to do that. And in particular, the forensic work that would need to be undertaken to unravel the harm that the cyber attacker has done, and understanding what data has been exposed or removed. And then, of course, you have the whole piece about business interruption, where you might not be able to trade and that might have an impact. So in terms of the costs, it would cover the costs of the investigation, and it would cover the cost of the ransom. It would cover costs of business interruption. So there's a whole plethora of things that it can cover, subject to obviously limits and policy conditions. But it's a real vital piece, I think, to give a firm that panic button that if it happens, who do I call? And knowing that support is really there from you know, minute one that you discover, unfortunately, your security has been compromised.
Thanks, Chris. Can I just come in and say, again, I've had a number of notifications from people that they are using third-party recording devices on this meeting. We have been explicitly advised that any third-party recording of this meeting is a GDPR breach. I must therefore ask anyone that is using a third-party recording device to either turn it off or leave the meeting, please. I'm sorry to have to do that, but we've had very explicit advice to that effect. So the people who are using third-party devices really prefer that you'll just turn off those tools. We are recording the meeting. We will publish it after the event. But if people could turn off their own third party, if your company has conditions that say you must record every meeting, I'm afraid we can't allow you to be involved in the meeting. Very sorry about that, but we can't breach GDPR by running the meeting ourselves. So thanks very much, Chris. I think some tremendous information there. Joseph, can I come to and ask you to talk about, you know, what are the cybersecurity risks that advisors are facing at the moment? What can be done to help them? What are the most common attacks? Perhaps you'd like to start on that.
Yeah, and I found it really interesting what Chris said right as he opened there around the bigger, generally the bigger IT teams, the bigger cyber teams that companies have, the more likely they are to have insurance. And I find that interesting because I would say one of the biggest things advisors can do to address cybersecurity risks, I think there's really three different areas, three different things that they can begin to do to address risks. And first and foremost, the most important thing is education. And maybe the reason that some of the bigger IT teams are more likely to have insurance is because there's more education within the firm. And I think that education piece is just so important, understanding where the potential risk can come from, both internally, internal processes, but most importantly, externally, and the interactions you're having with clients and where that cyber threat may be coming from. So education, I think, is one of the biggest things advisors can do to address cybersecurity risks. I think the second thing is policy. So getting certifications in place like ISO 27001, getting Cyber Essentials Plus in place. These are almost foundational level certifications and policies that advice firms can get in place that really set the standard in terms of procedures and actions and responses that you can take to make sure data is secure and interactions with clients are secure. And then finally, and of course, I'm blowing the trumpet here, technology. Technology is really important to have in place to ensure any interactions with clients are secure and you minimize the threat of a cyber attack as best as possible. Ian, to your question, in terms of where the biggest risks are, I think the absolute biggest risk for a financial advice firm is any outward front office client facing interactions that they have, because that is the point at which phishing might occur. And phishing is really responsible, I think, for over 90% of cyber attacks on businesses. And phishing can happen, to give you an example, when someone doesn't recognize or someone recognizes an email and thinks it's coming from someone they know, they can look really convincing. They can be fully branded. The name, the title, the subject can all look very familiar. You click a link because you recognize it, and the web page that opens looks familiar. It's incredible how good they're getting at aligning that to things that you're expecting and things you're seeing, and implementing a technology solution that effectively handles the encryption as part of the solution can really minimize that, because you have to come to the encrypted solution for those interactions to take place. So any outside or third party attackers don't get access to that solution. So you can be very confident and assured that any interactions you're having with clients as part of this encrypted solution are secure, and it really is the client that you're speaking to, and vice versa, the client knows it is you that they're speaking to, and it's not an attacker.
Yeah, I think on that point, it's really an interesting one. I must admit, I have even with people I know now, if they send me an attachment I'm not expecting, I won't open it. If anyone sends me an attachment I don't know them, I'll never open it. Indeed, I was talking to a friend of mine who had a situation the other day where he got something from someone he'd had a phone call with 24 hours earlier, and, you know, just thought it was really weird. I wasn't expecting that after that phone call. And sure enough, he called the guy and said, "Did you just send me something?" And the answer was no. And it was an incredibly good identity impersonation. Chris, can I come back to two-factor authentication? You shared some views on that in terms of quite how important it was the other day. I think it would be really good if you could talk to us about multi-factor authentication, other security measures that are wise, and I would also like to cover policies on artificial intelligence. So if I can invite you to comment on those three, that would be really good.